WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump just said talks are underway with Democrats on health care, a key sticking point to win the government shutdown.
Now, we have a negotiation going on right now with the Democrats that could lead to very good things. And I'm talking about good things with regard to health care.
The White House earlier said President Trump believes there is nothing to negotiate. The city of Chicago and Illinois have filed suit to stop the deployment of National Guard troops. Governor J.B. Pritzker says the influx of federal agents is already caused headaches.
Trump and the thuggery that his agents have brought has actively made us less safe.
Indirect talks are underway on a U.S. plan to stop the fighting in Gaza, but Haley Ott reports that hasn't happened yet.
An Israeli government spokesperson said that while certain kinds of bombings had stopped ahead of the negotiations in Egypt, there currently is no ceasefire in Gaza.
On Wall Street, stocks finished mixed. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. The message was for Milwaukee County, but with a run for governor as the backdrop, David Crowley may have tailored the address for a wider audience. Last week, Milwaukee County Executive Crowley delivered his proposed budget for next year. Stuart J. Waddles reports.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley is proposing a $1.4 billion budget for next year that includes cuts to transit and health services. It's to address a $47 million deficit.
We are the largest, the most diverse county in Wisconsin. We are the economic engine of the Badger State, and we are Wisconsin's epicenter for culture, entertainment, industry, innovation, tourism, and so much more. So let's act like it. Let's lead by example. The rest of the state is watching how we're going to respond to these challenges. Because you know what? They're feeling the pinch too.
The shortfall is said to be caused by inflation, public safety overtime, and the end of pandemic aid. To close the gap, the county plans to reduce bus service hours, raise fares, and cut programs like same-day paratransit. Health and Human Services, including substance abuse and eviction support programs, also face reductions. Crawley is asking for a $12 million increase in the property tax levy to help balance the budget. The Democratic candidate Crowley now faces a more crowded field in the race for governor. Former Economic Development Director Missy Hughes announced her bid this week. Also running, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, beer vendor Ryan Sternad, and Madison area reps Francesca Hong and Kelda Royce. Among Republicans, Representative Tom Tiffany and Washington County Executive Josh Showman have declared their candidacies.
The 2026 Wisconsin fall primary will take place on August 11th to narrow the field of those running for governor. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Brewers and the Cubs tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where it's game two of the National League Divisional Playoffs. The Brewers winning game one 9-3, but Jackson Churio had to leave with a hamstring injury. Pat Murphy on his status.
The MRI came back, and it's inconclusive, and it's not a serious hamstring strain.
The Brewers jumped out to a 6-1 lead in the first inning Saturday. Cubs manager Craig Counsell.
Look, the game got away from us early, so it's not like it did, right? It got away from us, so... Man, it's a loss, and you move on from it quickly. There's no penalty. It's one loss. Doesn't count for more how you lose. We didn't lose well, but we lost, and you move on. That's how the clubhouse felt.
NBA, the Bucks are in Miami for a preseason game against the Heat. Giannis is now with the team after a bout with COVID.
He took a toll on my body. I'm not feeling 100% yet physically. Take it day by day. Get back in shape.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe an evening shower, otherwise partly cloudy tonight, a low within a few degrees of 40. Sunshine for tomorrow, highs in the mid-60s, and highs in the low 60s with sun on Wednesday. Slight chance for showers on Thursday, highs staying in the 60s, currently 57 degrees.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect.
beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the Mulva Cultural Center's Katie Compton, then filmmaker and founder of Chair on Stair Films, Derek Pfister, joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go. Thank
go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Monday to you one and all. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a stacked show for you today as the government shutdown grinds into its second week with no end in sight. Of particular note, at, let's see, 5 p.m. this afternoon, I'm going to be joined by Congresswoman Gwen Moore of Wisconsin fame. Of course, she's going to be giving us her insights on the shutdown. But I wanted to begin today a bit more broadly, to think about what we have been told and how we as a public understand the role of government, and especially those that work in government, what we call public servants, civil servants. There's been so much derision, attack, and frankly, disrespect that has been directed at public servants at all levels of government. And I want to explore a bit with my guest for this next half hour about why and if those are valid bits of mistrust or if they're misplaced, and why might it be the case that politicians find it convenient or politically advantageous to attack public servants, and why is it that Donald Trump thinks that it's a good thing to attack the civil service system within our federal government with someone like a billionaire overlord happened to be named Elon Musk. We're going to get into all of that. My next guest has served in all three branches of the federal government. He was a staffer for Congressman Jim Leach. He clerked for a United States Courts of Appeals judge. He also clerked for Justice David Souter on the Supreme Court. Between those two positions, he also worked in the Department of Justice. He spent time in private practice as well, primarily in white-collar defense. And he most recently served as the Deputy General Counsel for Litigation in the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So this man knows what we are about to talk about inside and out. Welcome, Max Steyer, President and CEO for the Partnership for Public Service. Thank you for being here, sir.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Let's start with the basics. What's the Partnership for Public Service? What do you all do?
So we are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to better government and stronger democracy. So what does that mean? It means that we look out and there are 1.5 million nonprofits focused on all kinds of critical issues of public interest. And pretty much we were alone focusing on trying to make our government be a better executor of whatever policy the public decides it wants. Every organization needs to focus not just on the idea, but how to get it done. And that was our piece, focusing on how we could make the federal government a more efficient and more effective actor in getting the public's desires done in a way that was cost effective and met their needs. So you think about our government, it's the one tool we have for collective action to deal with our biggest problems. And making it work well is, I think, fundamental to our quality of life and ultimately to our democracy.
Max, you're a man of my own heart. I talk about those concepts all the time on this program. As a former government servant, having run Milwaukee County's law department for many, many years, what I say to people, anybody, whether I'm in a church pew or on a bar stool, I will say that when you are in government service, you check your personal political beliefs at the door and you try to show up. And especially if you're in a leadership position, I viewed my job almost as if we were fiduciaries of a taxpayer dollar. And the legislation tells you what the objectives are and the vision for that body of law. And then it becomes the responsibility to get those results and to do them with the greatest taxpayer dollar efficiency that we can, and to be clear-eyed and unafraid of that analysis. I, as an economist, believe this is how we rebuild trust in government, by being vigilant about the results and again, fearlessly reporting them. Folks, we're going to share the website for the Partnership for Public Service, because there is a data dashboard there where you can learn probably more about individual executive branch agencies than I've found in a single place. And I've looked a lot of places, Max. It is an incredibly powerful tool. I think what your organization is doing right now is probably one of the most important moments for you all to be doing the work that you do. But I wanted to start with a general question. Why have public servants always been effectively a handy butt of the joke, right? Why is it politically salient for the MAGA party to, in effect, they think it's very helpful to attack public servants, to try to get rid of the civil service, to fire tens of thousands of people without, frankly, assessing whether or not that will actually improve results or efficiency? Why is this happening now?
Look, I mean, this is a big, important question that one could go on for a very long time about, but I will just try to highlight some of the key elements that I think that are at play here. You know, first, it's been bipartisan sport to run against Washington, which is code work for our government. The truth is that 80% of the federal workforce is actually outside the D.C. metro area. And, you know, almost a third of them are veterans. Almost all of them, 70%, work on national security. I mean, there's all kinds of myths out there about who they are. And generally speaking, they're not accurate. So, you know, why is it that we've seen everyone running against our government? I think part of it is because most people don't understand what our government does. What our research shows is that when you show Americans, you know, who these folks are, the career civil servants, their attitudes change quite a bit. So when you think about them being the smoke jumper who is stopping a fire, or the food safety inspector who's making sure that you can buy hamburger meat for your kids and not have them get sick, that it's the intelligence analyst that's trying to stop the next 9/11. I mean, all these things matter a great deal to us. And they're really, you know, hidden from view for most Americans. And that's something that we need to change. What you said at the outset in terms of being a good steward of government resources, you know, making our government work better is part of the answer. I think the other part is communicating more effectively about who these people are. And the reality is our government can and should do better. You know, by and large, that's the problem has been the political leaders, not actually the career civil servants. The mess we're in right now is caused by those political leaders, not by the civil servants. It helps the political leaders to deflect and focus the blame on, again, those career civil servants. It's not right. It's poor leadership, and it's damaging to our long-term health as a country.
It seems that, you know, we may be in a moment of a tipping point, a real pivot point in terms of the federal government. And I, you know, while I always talk about the fact that we have to have fidelity to results and taxpayer dollar efficiency, at the same time, I've always been a vigorous defender of public servants, many of whom I know personally show up and are doing extraordinary work under ever increasing budgetary constraints. My question to you is, in this moment where we have seen these massive layoffs, and yet this year's federal budget is well over by the nearly by the tune of, I think it was like $300 billion over prior year spending to date, laying off thousands of workers, folks are taking those early retirements, the brain drain out of civil service, especially career civil servants, their understandings, their expertise.
Yes.
Their loyalty to the American people. Most folks that I know went into public service because they literally wanted to serve their families, their communities, their state and their country. Are we at an inflection point that may take us quite some time to recover from? And what do we do about it? What does a listener do about it?
Yeah, no, 100%. So again, you ask such powerful, important questions that deserve, you know, a more extensive answer, but I'll try to be quick about sharing that we are at an inflection point. I think the most fundamental issue that we're confronting is a vastly different model about what our government is there for than we've accepted for 140 years, well past any of our, you know, living memories. We had this spoil system in the 19th century. It led to incompetence and corruption and ultimately to the assassination of President Garfield, which put us on a better course of understanding that you actually need civil servants, as you just said, committed to the public good rather than the interests of the president of the day. And we have a president now who is trying to return us to that prior system. You know, Project 2025, which lays out the agenda that this administration has now clearly embraced, includes a return to the spoil system, you know, quite explicitly. And so there's so many different elements of this, but that's the most important, is ultimately what's the purpose of our government? Is it here for all of us or for the person who can make the most out of their time in office? And unfortunately, our president is trying to take us in that direction. And in the process, it's not only, you know, firing lots of great people who have great experience who could be helping the public, it's doing it in a way that is maximally damaging to our interests as a country. Most demeaning to the people that are involved, and the human, you know, harms that are caused are pretty profound. And it's also, you know, going on in the long term, put us at real risk. I mean, I mentioned 9/11 earlier. You think about Hurricane Katrina, the pandemic, sort of the three big and most scarring events we faced as a country. We are now in a position of being more at risk for those kinds of things than we've ever been before because of the mistreatment of government resources that were there to actually prevent bad things from happening.
Max, we've got about a minute before I've got to sneak in a quick break, maybe a little longer than that. Address merit in civil service hiring and the fact it's corollary or the flip side of that coin, which is that if you remove civil servants and you don't have a civil service system and you have a spoil system, why it is bad, why you end up with really bad results when the litmus test is your loyalty to a party or a particular partisan viewpoint.
Well, so just make it concrete. Do you want that air traffic controller to be there because they're the best trained person to make sure the planes take off and land safely, or the person who is, you know, politically loyal to the president? Do you want the FBI agent knocking on your door because they've been told that you're, you know, an enemy of the president's interests, or you want someone who's going to say no, that the law actually has to be followed? I mean, across the board, it's obvious. If you want to have people who are going to do our interests in the best way possible, you want it to be based on merit, not on politics. I think people already are concerned about that, but and we can do better. But where we're going right now is really a terrible direction.
Folks, we're joined this half hour by Max Steyer, president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, one of the only nonprofits, nonpartisan organizations out there looking at how to foster leadership in public service, how to ensure that our federal government is efficient and effective and is serving the American people. Not one ideology, not one party, and absolutely not one man. Don't go anywhere. I talk about how merit-based examinations and promotions actually operate in civil service and why that's good for every American and Wisconsinite. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Two U.S. Supreme Court cases this term may allow the conservative majority to strike down Voting Rights Act protections of minority voters and one of the few remaining limits to big money campaign spending in federal elections. Louisiana v. Calais, a racial gerrymandering case, returns to the High Court October 15th for additional arguments after initial oral arguments March 24th. Louisiana's black voters won a second majority-minority congressional district under the Voting Rights Act, but a group of, quote, non-African-American individuals appealed the new map, claiming it was discriminatory to them under the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas have railed against such minority protections in voting rights, education, and workplaces. Another case, National Republican Senatorial Committee versus Federal Election Commission, attempts to strike down campaign spending limits by party-affiliated groups as a violation of free speech. While national political parties can make unlimited donations to a federal candidate, they are limited in what's called coordinated spending with a candidate, which can include renting venues, sending mail, or most importantly, advertising. It could open another floodgate of money in our elections. The cases have far-reaching implications for equity in our elections process, and we'll be following both carefully in the coming months. I'm Brian Beal.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care, they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Monday afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined by a great guest this afternoon. His name is Max Steyer. He's the president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service. They're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that focuses on how to make government work better, how to foster leadership in public service. And I can't think of a better person to be talking to about this moment that we're in. Max, behind you is a statement by Alexander Hamilton. The vigor of government is essential to the security of liberty. What does that mean? And why is the civil service essential to that concept?
So deep, important concept. And the basic concept is we really have one tool for collective action. I said this earlier, to deal with our big problems. The only one has the imprimatur of the public and taxpayer resources behind it. We need a government that can enable us to operate effectively as a society. And it needs to be vigorous in the sense that it needs to be merit-based. It needs to be an organization that isn't based on again, the spoils system or politics. It's distinct from what you would see in the private sector. A lot of folks say, well, why can't we just run government like a business? One reason why you can is you have things like shutdowns and no business would be able to operate in that context. But you also do have political currents that lead the elected folks to want to put in place their supporters rather than the people who can actually do the job best. And they're not held accountable in a way that you would in the private sector. So you do have rules that require hiring and firing to be done on the basis of who's most capable of doing the job. And you can't be removed for political reasons or for your speech. You can be removed if you're not doing your job well. And you want to obviously hold people to account for the right things. And that's the system that we have. We can make it work better, but burning it down isn't the way to actually get there.
Let's talk about a mini burn. We are in the midst of what appears to be a shutdown with no off-ramp. Republicans, MAGA folks have basically refused, in my opinion, to negotiate in good faith. Democrats have articulated what I think is a very narrow, specific ask, which is to bring back these credits for ACA insurance premiums, these subsidies that help keep healthcare affordable. Premiums going to be exploding. They're not even, Democrats and Republicans can't even say what they're arguing about, right? That is worrisome. Again, it's pointing to the failure of political leadership, not the failure of the public servant or the civil service folks writ large. What does a shutdown do to morale, government effectiveness? And is it true, as Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have been claiming, that they are going to be compelled, they're going to have to, they must fire potentially thousands of federal employees? Let's start with that statement. Is that true?
So the answer is no, it's not true, nor did they have to fire effectively or constructively over 200,000 federal employees already. Our harms tracker breaks that down in great detail. They've been fire rather than ready, aim, fire. It's created enormous waste and damage in our government. And the shutdown is a true failure of stewardship of the leaders. It's malpractice to do it. It does not require or even empower them to do more in the way of firing folks. The way they've been managing it to date, with putting out of office emails that are highly political, is wrong. Federal resources should not be used in that way. It's illegal. Part of the challenge is, though, they've fired the people who are responsible for actually enforcing those laws. So it's a big problem. We should not be where we are. The leadership, you know, should get their act together. There can be differences, but this is not the sort of, we should have a Geneva Convention that says this kind of thing is off limits for the management of public resources.
Yeah, specifically, Max, you're referring, of course, to the Hatch Act, which makes it illegal to use federal funds and employee time or to direct employees to engage in particular political speech, political activity. When you've got an out of office email that is being mandated to be sent from every single furloughed or employee that's not working because of the shutdown that blames Democrats, that's a violation of the Hatch Act. But don't worry, the enforcers of the Hatch Act, that Office of Special Counsel's counsel, has got all of its staff. No, it doesn't. Donald Trump fired nearly everyone from the Office of Special Counsel responsible for ensuring the anti-corruption law, also known as the Hatch Act. It's pretty stunning. How do you think we need to move forward? How do we break through to people? How do we help people understand what public servants are actually doing? How do we respond to the sort of doginess of the political dialogue right now? It's so hard to explain, I think, in moments to people about the individuals that are doing this work. It's easy to talk in these vague generalities when people are so frustrated.
Look, I think this is difficult. We are in a challenging time with a lot of stuff coming at us. I think it's really important that people not get turned off, to pay attention, and ultimately to understand why this is bad for themselves and to hold to account the people that are doing it. And lastly, to understand there is a better way. We can make our government better, but as I said earlier, tearing it down is not going to get us anything but more trouble.
Folks, that is Max Steyer, president and CEO for the Partnership for Public Service. Max, will you come back very soon and we will talk more about this? I would love to talk.
Welcome the return conversation. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Thank you, Max. Thank you to your organization. You can find the harms tracker. You can find efficiency metrics. Go to ourpublicservice.org. That's ourpublicservice.org. And stay tuned. I'll be joined by First District Senator candidate Sean Grorich. Next, we talk about his newly announced campaign. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. No more pennies at Quick Trip. The company announced recently they're going penniless. Connie Thelman reports.
Cash transactions will now be rounded down to the nearest 5 cents. So if you're paying with cash, you could actually save a couple cents. You'd pay a buck, for example, if your total is $1.04. Credit card and digital transactions, though, will stay the same. In a statement, the company says they made the move because their penny supplies are exhausted and they haven't gotten enough guidance from the U.S. Department of Treasury after the decision to stop minting new pennies.
According to its website, Quick Trip serves almost 12 million people every week. It has stores across Wisconsin, Minnesota, northern Michigan, Iowa, Illinois, and South Dakota. It's a magical time of the year. If you're lucky, you'll get to see monarch butterflies. Savannah Tolme Olsen has more.
Monarch butterflies are on a 2.5-month journey down south to central Mexico. They usually fly during the day and roost at night. Those roosts can sometimes contain hundreds or thousands of butterflies. Karen Oberhauser is an entomology professor at UW-Madison. She says only super generation monarchs migrate. Now get this, only 2-5% of eggs and caterpillars even make it to adulthood. So the ones heading south are special.
And then this final generation, this 2-5% has to migrate all the way to Mexico and come partway back. So it's really an incredible story of survival against incredible odds.
Anybody can help track their migration. It's all based on citizen sightings. Anybody with property can help butterflies, too, by planting things like milkweed and nectar sources. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
And I'm Melissa Kay. You're listening to WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. There is one house that will be less full. Fraudsters Lori Laughlin and husband Massimo Giannulli have decided to take a break from their marriage. The couple was embroiled in a college admissions scandal in 2019 after bribing college officials to get their daughters of limited intelligence into a college. The couple pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit fraud. Ex-Full House actor Laughlin spent 2 months and Giannulli 5 months in minimum security correctional facilities. Yep, they even finagled their way into better prisons. The Hollywood Reporter says the two have been married for 28 years and have decided not to file divorce papers at this point. The college admissions scandal was a nationwide conspiracy. Fellow actors Felicity Huffman and William Macy were also involved in the scandal because they cheated for their rich kids too. Okay, I get that it might be a bummer to be privileged and not all that bright, but the parents are actors. Couldn't they have taught their kids to at least pretend to be smart? For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe an evening shower, otherwise partly cloudy tonight, a low within a few degrees of 40. Sunshine for tomorrow, highs in the mid-60s, and highs in the low 60s with sun on Wednesday. Slight chance for showers on Thursday, highs staying in the 60s, currently 57 degrees.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Homeless veterans are facing a crisis in Chippewa Falls, and Brittany Carlone from Wisconsin Watch will be here to tell us a solution on the horizon and the Brewers results and more. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're just joining us. And happy Monday afternoon, one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the things that has got me feeling hopeful and my blood pumping is the incredible candidates that we've been interviewing on this show that are running for our state Senate and assembly seats, specifically because of our much more fair maps. We've got one of these incredibly impressive candidates joining us for the next half hour. His name is Sean Grorich. He is running for the first state Senate district. He's a veteran. He's worked in healthcare. He's owned a small business, and he's here to share a little bit about himself and why he's running for office. Welcome to the show, Sean. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Maggie. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. So, why run for office? It is nasty out there, sir. I ask everybody who comes on this program who's brave enough to hold an elected office or seek an elected office, why are you doing this now? It's a harsh environment.
It is, but I think it's, I've always been somebody of service. So I've always served my community, served my country, and, you know, it's just was one of those things that I started checking into it about almost a decade ago, 8-9 years ago, where I wanted to, I was getting a little frustrated where things were at and was hoping that I could do something to change. But, you know, as life has it, you just aren't quite ready.
Yes.
So it was kind of put to the back burner, and I kept thinking about it, but now I'm in a position where I have things, you know, life events in place, and feel like I can dedicate the time that it's going to take. Because as I was researching, you know, going into it, I started to understand how much time it's going to consume. So I wanted to make sure that I could do a good job if I was going to put myself forward. So now the time is right, and I feel like I can put forward the effort and the time commitment that it's going to take, and hopefully push Wisconsin forward.
It is our state motto, forward. And I think we need much more of that forward commitment.
Forward momentum.
That's right. From all of our elected officials across the spectrum. I know you grew up in a small town in central Wisconsin, about 700 folks in your hometown. And you went right out of high school into the Air Force. You served in the reserves as a medical service specialist. You then ultimately became a certified registered nurse anesthetist. Tell us about, you know, when I look at your resume and your background, Sean, what I saw was what you described, a life that's lived in service of others. And then as a small business owner, serving your community in that way. Tell us a little bit about that journey for you and how that's preparing you to run for office.
I think having been, a student that was, I was an okay student. I wasn't, you know, straight A's or, you know, the top of my class, but I did okay. But then, you know, not knowing what I wanted to do right out of high school. So, you know, joining the service gave me direction, gave me time to figure out, what that was that I wanted to do in life, which couple years in is, you know, when I decided, I'm like, oh, I'm volunteering to be, you know, the medic in our team squads and things like that. So I was like, okay, I think I'm going to go into medicine, in some capacity. So, you know, having that experience was awesome and, you know, gave me, you know, insight into, you know, all the different places that I traveled. A lot of those were in Central America, some not such great situations, but some of the best memories that I still have, even though they were some of the worst situations. So then, just having to work my way through, you know, having to work through college and try to pay my own way through college. So I had a lot of starts and stops, right? Trying to earn a little money, go to college, it got spent down, go, you know, quit college, earn a little money, that back and forth trying. And then finally I was like, okay, this is just taking too long. So I quit my job and just took out the loans. But it was going that long scenic route that gave me experience as I worked my way through college, so that, I ended up earning a phlebotomy degree, which got me into the hospital, which then I was still started working as a phlebotomist drawing blood while I worked my way through search tech program. Well, that gave me exposure to the operating room, and everybody knew that I was going on for my nursing degree. So they pulled me into situations to say, you need to see this. You're going to want to know this as a nurse. You're going to want to do this. And then it was working so I ended up getting back into the reserves, got my medical service specialist there, came back, ended up getting a job as an anesthesia tech, which gave me, I was there assisting anesthesia personnel, and they were pulling me in knowing that I was going down to nursing. So it was those individuals that ended up encouraging me to go on beyond my bachelor's degree. So I was just going to go get my bachelor's nursing degree. And so they encouraged me to go even further. And, that experience of working with all those different anesthesia providers and giving me all the different, learning experiences really helped me feel comfortable when I, decided to go on and, go into the, full on for my master's. So it was taking that long scenic route to get to where I am that gave me so much valued education. That I'm glad I went, that long scenic route. Had I just got out, had the money to go to college, I probably would have only, got my nursing degree and started doing something there. Whereas I went a totally, different route than I had expected. So that's been kind of my entire life. I've had different situations that have made me pivot, and you end up learning from that pivot. So you have to be able to adapt and adjust to the new situation, which kind of leads me to where I'm at. Pivoting again, where it's like, okay, I can take all of those experiences and apply them to what we need to help move Wisconsin forward, right? So that's kind of the whole background in my history has led me to decide, like, I think I have a broad scope of experiences out there that I can talk to a lot of different individuals and learn from what they feel are important and say, okay, let's look at this and let's apply some strategies to solve this problem. So
I hope I don't embarrass you, Sean, when I say this. And folks, if you're just joining us, I'm joined by Sean Grohrich. He is a candidate in the first state Senate district in 2026. I don't mean to embarrass you when I say this, Sean, but your story, I think, is one that will resonate with so many people. You had to figure out how to make it work. You served your country, the on and off ramp to complete higher education, the experiential learning, the encouragement that you got, this was not linear. And I think that is by far the much more common experience for so many people in the state of Wisconsin and in, frankly, the industrial upper Midwest writ large. And I think it just speaks a lot to your own grit, determination, and openness to different experiences and different pathways to get there. And yet, this idea that you're going to continue to push forward and gain these experiences and try to achieve what you want, achieve your highest version of yourself, I think is incredibly laudable. I've often said to folks, when you're born with everything and you go on and you go to undergrad and you get the good grades and you go on and you get the nice corporate job, you don't get an A in my book. You get a C, because that's your path. You've had every privilege. But for folks like yourself that figure it out, put it together largely on your own, make this work, and the determination, that gets an A+. That's just my two cents on this, Sean, but a lot of admiration for your service and, of course, your determination. You're a dad. You're a small business owner. Tell us about those experiences and how those are impacting your desire to be an elected official now.
Oh, I mean, owning a business, is another learning experience. You can do a lot of research, and things don't always come up as you do your research. The standard things that you've got to get this in place, you've got to get that in place. But then there's things that you don't see that are like the little things. And it's like, oh, well, it's one of those things that I want to work on. If I get elected, it's like, there's got to be a way to streamline some of this stuff. It is so cumbersome and it's not just me. It's for all small businesses where you're trying to, you've got this passion, you want to, get this started, you've got to get everything in place, but then you've got all these things that you have to try to keep track of. And it's usually just you or you and one other person or something like that.
Yeah.
You're trying to keep track of all this information and all these things that you have to apply for. And it's like, there's six different websites for, all the different things that you have. You would think that we could somehow streamline that and have it all in one place. All the licenses that you need for the state, all the information for employees, and like just everything is all a different website, and it would be
we've put in so many barriers to entry, right? Like, yeah. I'm an economist as well as a lawyer, and I talk about this all the time. Democrats, we need to start speaking the truth about these regulatory systems and how challenging they are for people to navigate. We have put many, many, I'm going to say, inefficient barriers to entry for small business owners when we should be making it easier, like one-stop shopping. It is a morass. We need to look at, do these regulations, do these licensures, do all of these things actually help achieve the good or the outcome, the result that they were originally intended to help achieve? Do they continue to make sense?
You can tell they've been added onto each other.
Yeah, so layers.
It was all layered in. So it's like, okay, we need to take a step back. All of those, rules and regs and things are in place for a good reason and are needed. It's just a matter of, we need to step back and reassess, how can we make this efficient and easier for individuals to run businesses or start businesses? A lot of people want to start, but it's like overwhelming. So if we can streamline some of those, once you get moving, it's hard to like stop the truck and fix the fire. You just keep running on that flat. So.
Yep. I call it trying to build the airplane while you're flying it for a lot of small business owners. And sometimes it feels like the regulations are worried about what color paint you're making your airplane, when it's like, hey, is it flying? Are there seats? And are the essential safety elements there? Folks, we're talking with Sean Growrich. He's a candidate for the first state Senate district in 2026. You can find out more about Sean at GrowRich4FORWisconsin.com. Again, that's GrowRich4FORWisconsin.com. We come back, we're going to talk about his five policy pillars of his campaign: cost of living, healthcare, protecting our natural resources, education, and reproductive freedom. Do not go anywhere. This great discussion continues on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You could think you found your dream home online. The kitchen island looks perfect for your inner chef. The backyard, a paradise for your green thumb. And that extra room, hello walk-in closet. But here's the twist. The lot next door just got rezoned for years of construction. And this sound, you're going to be hearing a lot of that. Don't let your dream home turn into a nightmare. Work with the expertise and ethical training of a realtor, here to guide and help protect you from the surprises you didn't see coming. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors, right by you.
Big Ten football returns to Madison this fall. The Wisconsin Badgers battle Iowa, Ohio State, Washington, and others to defend Camp Randall this season. From the grind of every snap to the roar of jump around, Badgers leave it all on the field. Be a part of all the tradition Wisconsin football has to offer. Single game tickets are available now at uwbadgers.com or by calling 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Together, we're Wisconsin like that.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent weeks, the level of activity from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has increased quite a bit. There was a raid in Manitowoc at a Walmart parking lot where dairy workers were known to congregate, a series of arrests in Madison, and in Milwaukee, ICE is looking to expand its operations significantly by seeking office space downtown to go along with a new field office on the city's northwest side. This has been concerning for many, and not without reason. A recent large-scale ICE raid in an apartment building in Chicago saw reports of armed federal agents breaking down doors, U.S. citizens detained for hours on end, and children being dragged from their homes in the middle of the night. While the American immigration system has a host of problems, this kind of violent show of force is not an acceptable way to address these problems. And ICE also just received an injection of $45 billion in the One Big Beautiful Bill, so it is imperative for all of us to hold ICE accountable and speak out when things go too far. Right now, things are going way too far.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
This one goes out to the elder millennials. We're not as flashy as those other millennials and not as grungy as Gen X, but our music deserves another listen. Burn Before Listening features hits, deep cuts, and some authentic cringe. This is how you remind. From 2000 to 2009, Burn Before Listening on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, Sundays at 9 p.m.
My name's John Driscoll, proud member of the Patriotic Millionaires. When I was CEO at CareCentrix, I doubled entry-level wages. The impact? Productivity went up, turnover went down, and the company was successful. When employees are off the clock, they're real consumers, the consumers that drive the economy with their spending. By paying employees a fair wage, we're actually helping out all of us in giving our economy the best chance to succeed. I'm John Driscoll. I'm a Patriotic Millionaire, and I approve this message.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Monday afternoon, one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm talking to yet another incredible candidate for our Wisconsin legislature in 2026. We got fair maps. We got districts that are toss-ups in greater number than we've ever had before. This means, Wisconsinites, that we have an opportunity to make our elected officials less partisan, more practical, and more accountable. Competitive districts equal accountable elected officials. That is good for everybody, no matter Republican, Democrat, Independent, or the I hate politics, make it stop crowd. So happy to have Sean Gorrich with me. He's running in the first state Senate district in 2026. He's a veteran, small business owner, a dad, and someone who has extensive experience in healthcare. Healthcare is one of your main issues that you're structuring your campaign around. Tell us a little bit about why this is incredibly important to you and what you think Wisconsin needs to be doing differently to ensure healthcare access and healthcare at an affordable price for all Wisconsinites.
Yeah. So I obviously working a little over 30 years in healthcare, I feel like that's just leans itself into why healthcare is important to me. But another reason is getting out of service. As I was trying to put my way through college, I went many years without healthcare, just because I was working, a minimum wage, where I was located. There weren't a lot of jobs. There was either fast food or, retail jobs, unless you got into working at the hospital, where then you started making a little more than minimum wage. that was kind of the big industry in that city, was the hospital. So having to work a minimum wage job, usually part-time because I was still trying to do college, you know, so I went many, many years without healthcare. Now, being a veteran, I had access to the VA hospitals or clinic system, but that was 2.5, almost 3-hour drive away for me. So when you're running 103, 104 temperature and you know, just not feeling good. And again, I was working a minimum paying job. So I didn't have a lot of gas money to, you know, I had needed that gas money to get to work and to get to college. So I didn't have a lot of extra money to be driving 3 hours while I had a fever and throwing up and all of that. So having to go without healthcare for so long until finally I got my degree, got a higher paying job that I could then, have a job that had insurance provided, through the job. So I know there are a lot more people out there like that when I was, so, and knowing the struggle, and when you work in the healthcare industry and you see people struggling and have let disease processes go because they can't afford healthcare, and then it's 10 times more expensive to help them with their it would have been easier and cheaper to take care of it had we had access earlier. So having seen that firsthand and experienced that firsthand, healthcare is really important to me. So I think Obama did a great job of getting us, 3/4 of the way there. We just need that full coverage for everyone. There's many different countries that do it. They have, the full healthcare coverage, but if you want to have private healthcare, it's available out there.
Right.
That's an option. There are several different ways, and I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of all the different policies, but I think it's a very important issue that everybody needs healthcare.
Yeah. We stand alone amongst developed nations in frankly, the lack of affordable, meaningful healthcare on a universal basis. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. The saying is there for a reason. You can find out more about all of Sean's main policy issues again at GoRichForWisconsin.com. I would be remiss, Sean, if I didn't ask you, as a veteran, last week we saw Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth command 800 of our top generals, their staff, and NCOs to gather at Quantico. The president also addressed them. I think it was fairly shocking to many of us. I never served, but many of my friends and family did. What was your reaction to that spectacle last week?
Appalling and embarrassed. I think anybody that has served has seen people that have been given command at different ranks, and you see it go to their ego and inflates their ego and they get that urge for power. I think that's what you were seeing on stage there, where to have high-ranking, well-educated, professional individuals being scolded like they were sixth graders was just abhorrent. So I think anybody that has served has seen that happen and probably felt the same way, regardless of where you stand politically. This is our country and the safety of our country. This is not a TV reality show that we need to be trying to get good ratings, for a TV pot, reality TV show.
Yeah, there was, I commented on this last week in talking with friends of mine as vets or active service members. Like the idea of talking about PT standards and grooming standards to 800 of our nation's top generals. Not what you do. Sean, thank you. Yes, thank you so much for spending some of your afternoon with us, folks. His name is Sean Gorich. He is running for the first state Senate district. Find out more about GoRichForWisconsin.com. When we come back, this great discussion continues with more incredible guests right here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is indicating there are negotiations to win the government shutdown. He said he's talking to Democrats about health care and the continued subsidies they've been demanding.
There could be a great deal of pain, but up till now there hasn't been. I will say this, just hang in there because I think a lot of good things are going to happen. That's all I can say. I mean, I think a lot of good things could happen, and that could also pertain to health care.
Illinois sued today to stop the deployment of National Guard troops. Governor Pritzker says the influx of federal agents is already caused harm.
There was never an insurrection or an invasion on the ground that justified the deployment of the military to our American city.
Haley Ott reports from Jerusalem. Israelis are closely following the talks in Egypt on a U.S. peace plan for Gaza.
People have been taking to the streets here and demanding that their government do something, work to achieve this deal in order to bring the hostages home.
CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.